Okay. So let's get started. Before going into the topic, I need to announce a couple of errors that I did in the assignment. So some of you are still, I guess, working on assignment four, so you haven't come to this point. But I had a couple coming into my office today, and we looked through one of the expat questions. And after they left, I looked at it in detail and found that this one is actually not solvable completely using XPath only. We can solve it if you combine XPath with XSL transformations that we're going to talk about in a couple of weeks, or DOM that we're going to be doing next week, but you can't solve it. So that's because of that, I changed a little bit the question number nine, so you can actually solve it using XPath only. And number 10, I had to rewrite a little bit to do the same thing. But now they should all be answerable using XPath only, and answerable completely, not just partly. So sorry for that. We'll talk about a little bit later today, I hope, the reason why this doesn't work or can't answer the initial versions of the questions. I also had a question, some of it starting with the task number two, and realizing that none of the tests pass, which is exactly what we should experience. Because if you look through the code, what it does, it's test club is testing to see that we are returning four club elements, an array of four club objects. But there is nothing implemented yet. So obviously there is no four. What if you look at the script is doing, it's returning an empty array. So since the array is empty, then of course it's not going to contain four elements that we expect. So the tests are written for testing that the implementation has been completed, or at least to the point where you get four. So if you look at the results here, we find that two tests are failing, and they're failing because if you look here, we expect four clubs. We didn't find any clubs. We expected 112 skiers. We didn't find any skiers. Because it was an empty array. And the other ones are failing because we're trying to grab the content of one of these objects. But there are no objects. If you try to get the content of an object, obviously it's going to fail. So or we can't get anything. So because of that, the tests are failing. So what I suggest that you do is that you implement one by one these functions, get clubs implemented, so that it will actually get the clubs from the XML file, and then this test would pass. Then we start with the skiers, get this basic skier information. Then the test here for skiers will pass. But then we haven't looked at the affiliation history yet, so these two won't pass. But when they implement getting the affiliation history, then these two should pass. And finally, we compute the yearly distances, and if you do that correctly, then the last two tests should pass. So the way to do this is, and the last two aren't written, so that's the first thing you should do. What should the test look like to make sure that yearly distances are correctly computed? And what I did here is that I have suggested sorry. Here, I have suggested that you use this skier. The skier number 15, in 2016, he skied 202 kilometers. And this number, the skier number 0, which has this username, in 2015, he skied 23 kilometers, and 2016, 55. So these are the data you could use. And we are just assuming, as we talked about when we talked about testing, we assume that if the computation is fine for these two, then we will be fine for all the others as well. even though we don't really know that. But that's why we test for to see that we get all the skiers and we get all the clubs, is to make sure that we, at least we get all of them, and then we test one of them to see if they look okay. And we pick ones that we think maybe, in this case, one that just skied for one season, the other for two seasons, and the affiliation, one that hasn't been affiliated with the clubs at all, one that has been affiliated several times, just to make sure that some edge cases are being covered. We don't know that we are testing everything, but we're testing so much that we believe that with this, the code should be okay. And if you find later on that there are errors, then we write a test for the error, and we fix it, and then next time, whenever we release code, we will make sure that it works again. So that's why it all fails now, and gradually, as you implement the code, then you should get through them one by one by one. And in the end, they're all passing, and then you're ready to submit. After the lecture yesterday, I got the feedback that I have been going through a little bit fast, so not everybody were able to keep up with what I was saying. And I hope and I think that what we were a bit brief on was on XPath. But that's what we're going to do all of today and tomorrow. We're going to work on XPath. So we're going to have plenty of time to understand the details there. What I did go quickly through was XML. So I thought maybe I added this to the slides. So if you have downloaded the slides, if you downloaded the PDF yesterday, then you should download a new one, because this slide is added to the PDF on Blackboard. It wasn't there yesterday. So what were the key messages in the general part yesterday? We just wrap it up, so make sure that everybody's with me on that one. Number one, what's the rationality for using XML? I mean, remember the disk example, the floppy disk example, and data being self-descriptive, that we can process. It's human readable, it's computer processable, and we have lots of tools around it. Some would disagree, but it's the basics are not too complex, let's put it this way. Nothing is really simple, but it's not too complex. Now, well-formed. We had a number of well-formed rules. Do you remember some of the rules? What does it mean that an XML document is well-formed? Remember anything? What would XML have to look like for it to be well-formed? Any of the rules we had yesterday would do. Give you a hint. For one rule is that inside an XML document, there could be only one root element. Because we can't have a tree, or a forest, we have to have a tree. That's number one. We were talking about all tags needing end tags. So we have to have start and end tags. We talked about proper nesting. So a child will have to be ended before the parent was ending. We talked about upper lowercase. It's a difference between uppercase and lowercase. If you start an element, start name with lowercases, then we have to use lowercases in the other one as well. So these were some of the more important ones. If you remember these, then the rest are not, they would stop you, but these are the ones that you are most likely to fail on, because these ones are the ones that are different from HTML that you may know from before. In HTML is more relaxed about some of these things. There should be only one root as well, because it's just a HTML root, but other than that, some of these are more relaxed in HTML. Then XML naming, that's maybe where you were saying. There are some requirements to XML names. If you remember, we were talking about would this be a proper name or not? What are the requirements? Yeah.
You have to separate them by an underscore or
an. Inside the name, you can't have blank inside the name. They need to be connected, and you can use underscore between the parts. You can use a dash. You can use a dot, but no other symbols. What about the start of a name? Could we use any character or anything for starting a name? There were some rather strict rules for an XML name. What could be the start? It could be one or two things. Yep. You can use underscore or a letter. Yes, nothing else. You can't use a digit. You can't use any other character. It has to be a letter or an underscore. And this applies for attribute names, element names, namespace prefixes, any ID values you use. And then we talked about namespaces. Why do we have namespaces? So that we can merge different XML applications in one application, one document. And we had the URI, which is really identifying the namespace. But when we use it, we will typically use what's called a qualified name, where we have a prefix. It could be anything. We just define it in the document. This is a prefix we're going to use. And the local part, which is the tag name without anything with the namespace. So this is pretty much from the first, the first 75 minutes of yesterday. In the last 50 minutes, we started on XPath, and this is where we're going to spend the day today. So hopefully you're going to be with me on this one. Let's see, this was the one I was thinking of. So what did we do yesterday? We said a little bit about XPath. Why? I'm going to skip through this quickly because we're going to dive into the details. We talked about the seven different ones. You have the root. You have elements, attributes, text nodes, commands, processing instructions, and namespace. And as we were saying, they are similar to file system paths. What do you remember? There's one big difference. You remember what that was? What is the result in the file system, in this case? What is the result of an ABC? C is either a file or a directory. And there will be only one C inside the B directory. But in XML, there could be many C children of B. And there could be many B children of A. So here we can have one A with many Bs and each one of them having many Cs. So here we are going to have a list of Cs rather than just one element. And that is an important difference. But other than that, we use the slash as the separator. And we can use star, meaning any element. This would match only elements with name B. And again, uppercase, so it's only uppercase B. Lowercase Bs would not match here. So we had a group of nodes, and we had another set of capabilities, and these are the ones we're going to play around with today. When we have slash slash, it means a sibling somewhere in the tree. If we do this slash slash, it is as if you do cd slash on your computer. What will happen then? You go to the root. So when you do slash slash here, it's going to start from the root looking for something. If you would like to start looking for where you are, then you could put a dot in front of it saying anything under right here. Because if you do a dot, it's where you are. Dot refers to the current directory or current node. So if you do list dot slash slash, it means anything under where you are. But we're going to come back to this. So this is probably where you felt I was rushing it yesterday. We're going to come back and show all the details. And you can go and look for special nodes. You can look for commands, for texts. And it is possible to navigate not only parent-child, but also sideways, since we have siblings. And complete parts of the tree, as you're going to see later on. Maybe not today, maybe tomorrow, we'll see. So the result is a node list, and it's important to remember that a node list is sorted, and it's more than a list, because in a list you can think of having the same element multiple times in the list, but in this case, the elements will only appear once and in the order in the document, either forward or backwards. Whether it's forward or it's backwards, that depends on operation, as we'll see in a while. So what we'll do is we separate the elements of the path, and we may have a test for what type of node. Is it any node? Is it a text node? Is it the element named A? Is it an attribute? Is it an attribute called URL? What is it specifically that we look for? And then we may have predicates saying only those who satisfy some conditions. So this is kind of the setup, and we'll start by looking at the paths and the node tests, and then do predicates a little bit later. And I hope that's okay. And this is how it looks like. So we're going to have the path and possibly then the node test. The path here will be either a child or a parent, or it could be a descendant. The node test, it could be that it's any element, or it's the element A, and then the predicate. So in this case, we say, what is the path here? Well, starting from the very top, we're going to find the food element. Under that food element, we're going to find a name. So that's what we find. We're going to go through the whole tree and find whatever food element that has name elements. We're going to stick with those name elements. But we're not going to include in that list any of these name elements that do not contain chicken, because here the requirement is that the current node, which would be the name that we are processing, should contain chicken in the text. We'll come back to these functions later on. We'll talk about these text string functions, contains, and some of the other ones a little bit later. So we're going to be going through. So my idea of presenting this yesterday was to give you a feeling for how these XPath expressions look like, and then we can go and explore the various paths, the various node tests, and the predicates. We're going to spend the time now on doing that. XPath in the browser, and I came here 1 hour early because I hadn't my calendar wasn't updated. Somehow this lecture, I'm not teaching it deep either. There's no one teaching this lecture, so it didn't show up my calendar. So I habit, I went here till 2 o'clock, and no one's here except a couple of guys. And one was asking about Firefox, because I said that in Firefox you may need to install Firebug. That's not correct anymore. In the newest version of Firefox, you also have web developer tools, and you can bring up the console. And inside the console, you can run the X function the same way as I've been showing on Chrome. So at least that's good. We have a same way to do this. So the X function is saying, okay, the console will run an XPath query, and the query is whatever is quoted in here. So here we search for the root element, which in Chrome case will be a document. In Firefox, I'm not so sure. You have to test to see what is the root element. I think it is not. I think if you open an XML document, it will be the root of the XML document. It used to be. But in Chrome, the XML document is attached to the body of the HTML document. So what you get is the document, the HTML document. So that causes a little bit of inconvenience, because we would like to test the queries like they will be in the application. And when we run the application, our DOM application, we will not have the browser document model on top of us. So we just have to keep in mind that when we do slash, that would be fine. That's what we would do in our application. But when we test it here, we can't do that, because slash is somewhere else in the tree. But we'll go through it and get used to it, I hope. And since the console is a JavaScript console, we can actually get also the actual node. This is a node list, because when we have these queries, we always get lists of nodes. Even if it's just one, it's a list. And we can get the one node by dereferences. Now, again, this is something to confuse us. In XPath, as in SQL, when you have character indexes or any indexes, they are starting with one. So when we look at XPath, the first element is element number one. Now, this is JavaScript. So in JavaScript, the first element is element zero. So when we dereference the elements in the return node list, we use zero for the first element. If you refer to the first element inside the list, it's at position one. So when we do the XPath, it's position one. We'll see it later on. That's the world. We just have to get used to it. And we will, eventually. But in this case, if you want to get the object, we need to grab it and get it to our console as a JavaScript object. And then it's going to be a JavaScript DOM object. And then we just dereference it as the first element in the list, which has index 0. Okay, now I'm going to go through quite a few examples. And what I suggest is that if you have your computers, you can get the sample documents from Blackboard. So there is a document called A, and a document called Nutrition. So you could bring them up and you can run in parallel. We're going to, the first part, I'm going to go quickly through them. But later on, when we start going through the nutrition examples, I'm going to give you a little bit of time to think and try a little bit yourself as well. So if you have the computer, you could use it. If not, you could just put it on paper, and then we'll go through and see what it could look like. In the first examples here, it's just shown on an example graph. And what I've done is I've highlighted the return node list or node sequence. I also have a different color. I hope on this projector they look different. I also highlight what nodes are being visited on the way to the final one. So this is the example tree. It's the A tree. The difference between this tree and the A tree you find on Blackboard is that I don't have any attributes here. For convenience, it makes it easier for me to refer to the node when we talk together. I have added IDs, I mean, some ID attributes on the A document. So when we look at it, we can refer to the node using its ID. But here it's just a node. So this is a very boring tree. It's an A with some children, and the children have children, and that's kind of the tree. If we were to find the root node, and we know it's A, we can do slash A. If you just do slash, we get the top. So if you go here now to here is my browser and the A document. So if I go to slash, if we had this XML document that we see here with the A on the top inside our program, we would get A out. We see we do get this document. So in our case, we can't do A to get the root of the XML document, because the XML document is attached to a div in the body in the HTML document that the browser keeps. So in our case, whenever there is a slash in the lecture notes to test it, we have to do two slashes, which means that somewhere in the document there should be an A. Now the problem is that if the root element name was used somewhere else, we get all the other A's as well. But in my document, there's only one A, and that A is on the top. So, and nutrition, in the nutrition document, the same thing. The root element name is unique, only appears on the top. So because of that, we can always replace slash with slash slash. Sorry about that inconvenience, but that's how it's implemented in Chrome. I think it's much better to use Chrome anyway, because otherwise we have to program everything in PHP or JavaScript or some other way to do this. So it's convenient to have this tool, even though it's not so logical every time. Okay, so if you get the top node, it's there. Now, if we ask for star, it means any element. Star is any element. That is a child of A. So that's why they are different. So this is green, meaning that we refer to A, but what we're looking for would be any child of A. So if we go here, we say A has, children. And we can see here a JavaScript processor is running on the side, so they're listing here, down here. You see down here that we have a B, the 11B, which is from up here, the 12B, which is up here, and the one, 3, which is an H coming here. Another inconvenience, another thing I don't like with Chrome, the way Chrome does it, is that Chrome converts everything to lowercase here. So if you see the result list down here, everything is lowercase. But the lowercase b is not the same as the uppercase b. So in the tree, it's uppercase, but now in the console, they show it as a lowercase. I don't know why they decide to do that, because in HTML, it's fine. And these developer tools are most developer tools for HTML, not for XML. But they could still have been nice with us and stick with the uppercase convention. But anyway, just get used to that here, lowercase, but we have to be very strict on following the casing. So if I here, for instance, so A has a B, so if I try to do a B here, nothing comes up. Because that B, even though it's, this is that lowercase, I have to do an uppercase. Sorry. So if I do B, nothing comes up. If I do B, it comes up, even though it shows in lowercase here. But I have to be careful about the casing. Okay. Yeah. What I just did, if I'm not interested in all the children, only the B children, children where element name is B, I will get these ones. And then, of course, I can get all the children of B by saying I don't care about what it is. So you find there are two C's and one D. That's what the B's that are children of A. So these are immediate children. So if there are B somewhere else or node somewhere else, it won't find them. You find exactly the ones that are grandchildren of A and they are children of B. Those are the restrictions. So if there had been other grandchildren here, they wouldn't come up. We can also use the wildcard in the middle. Say, okay, any grandchild of A, that is a C grandchild. So if we go back to this one, and then we say, okay, we are interested in the C's. But not these C's, all the C's. And then in this case, there were no other C's than the ones that were under the B. So it didn't make a difference in this example, this document. But it could have been. Are we okay with the speed, or is it a bit too fast? This is very similar to what you would expect from a file system, isn't it? You would go up and down and refer to children. And the difference, as I said, is that we have to remember that there are multiple children, and these children may have multiple children again. So you may have a multiple of grandchildren. But they're all going to be grandchildren of A in this case. There are questions? Are we okay with this? Okay. And now comes the descendant. Descendant, I already used it. And now if you're looking for all C's, then we just say all C's. So these are all the C's. It's looking through the whole tree. And this is something that we have to be a bit careful about. I don't know if Dipti talked about it in SQL. If you do select star, if you make a habit that whenever you're going to query a database, you do all the select star, it's convenient for you as a programmer because you could just lazily say star rather than listing all the elements. But it's not necessarily so good for future use, because if it's in a program and you later on change that table, you add more columns, maybe columns with lots of data, then select star is going to retrieve much more than what you need. So rather list what you're looking for. The same thing here. If you know exactly in the tree where the node is, we shouldn't use slash slash, even though it's convenient. Rather than saying nutrition, food, manufacturer, we just say manufacturer. But then remember that the consequence is that when we do slash slash, is that even though we know that it's a root node, it will have to go through the whole tree looking for any A's. If we know there's one A, the computer wouldn't know. And with slash slash, it has to visit the whole tree. So if this is a big tree, it's going to be lost looking for that A that we know as programmers, it won't find. So it's better. In this case, we were looking for seeds that don't have much in common other than they are in the tree. But if we were looking for the seeds of the bee, the first one, then we could get away with some saying, not in this case, since there were some other seeds. Let's say we wanted to find this H. This H, we can do a //H. So if you go here, we can do, if you want to find the H, we can do a //H. How much work would the computer need to do? And you have done 3 traversals with Frode by this time. What would it need to do? It will need to visit the A. No, this is not the H. 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 It has to go through the whole 3. And the final node, oh, there it is. This is the work. Now, if I do this, if I say, look for A sin H, what does it need to do? Well, unfortunately, in this case, it needs to do the same thing. Because we are running inside the browser, so we have to do. But if we could get away with this, say, okay, we're looking for the root node A and its child H. It doesn't work here since we are attached to the document, but if we could do this, how much work would it be here? Of course, we need to find the A, it matches. What do we need to do now? We need to visit the children of A. No, sorry, A. So we need to visit this one, it's not H. We visit this one, it's not H. We visit this one, it's H. So we have to visit 4 nodes rather than the complete tree. You follow me? So // is convenient for the programmer. It's a lot of work for a computer. And I tend to think that in this case, we can afford putting in A slash there, rather than saying //. It doesn't cost us so much as programmers. But as I said, if you're looking for the C's, and the C's, we don't know where they are in the tree, then we have to visit the whole tree to find them. And then it's just fine to use //. So just keep in mind that //, convenient for the programmer, don't abuse it, because performance-wise, it's not a very good operator, especially if you have a big tree. So, if you know exactly where the B is, try to use it. Don't use // rather than this exact path, just for convenience. Now, it might be that you, during testing, as you're developing and testing the idea, testing the predicate, that you just do the // first for convenience. But then when you say, now it's ready, now I know what the query should look like, then put in the whole path. So that when you release or when you're going to use something for real, then make sure that it is one that is robust and efficient as well. Okay. So, finding all the F nodes, what will we do? Can we say exactly where they are? Yeah, we could, kind of saying, okay, we're looking for the A, B, C, E, Fs, we're looking for the A, B, plus the A, B, C, E, F, and we can concatenate different paths in one search. But that's, in this case, it's very inconvenient, because the Fs are everywhere. So in this case, as we just did, we just do same with F, and we get all the Fs. It's very straightforward. What about finding all the F nodes that have a C parent? So we are not looking for these Fs, because they have an E parent. This one has a C parent. This one does not. This one does not. So we're going to end up with just this one. How could we do that? Not all the Fs, but what is the requirement? The F needs to be. Yeah. So we need to find a C somewhere. A C somewhere, and it needs a child F. Those are the Fs we're looking for. What did happen? I took away this one. That's not good. So now we find this is 1, 1, 2, 1, and that's the one. Let's see if I find it's higher up here. This is the one. So that's the one we found. So we can concatenate, looking for a C, and that's and under the C we look for the F, and the F is what we return. How would you find this node? Yeah. So we could just and we could do A and B and D, and that D have only one has only one C. So in this case, we can do A B D C. So. A, B, D, C. That's our 1, 2, 1, 1. 1, 2, 1, 1. This is the one we're looking for. So that's to navigate up and down and combining, searching the whole tree, searching just an exact path. And in this case, we couldn't do a slash slash C because that would also bring in these Cs. And we only want this C. So then we have to be explicit on the path. We, as we can do in a file system, we can also do relative paths in a browser, or sorry, in XPath. So what we've done now is we started from the top, always from the top, but what now if you are at a certain node, if you are in the tree, let's say in your case, you have found a skier and you need to aggregate all the distances they have been logging for a year. Okay, so you're not really interested in doing all distances for all users, just for this one. This is similar to, what is this similar to in SQL? You do something same in SQL sometimes. You do a grouping. So you would like to have aggregate anything under some of the nodes, not across all nodes. So we may want to search just under a node and do that for many nodes like we would do in a grouping. So what we can do here is we can search for a node that we want to use, the ABC node, for instance, as the root node. And since the JavaScript console can deal with variables, we can create a variable for holding it. And then we can use that variable later on when we search. So let's start by doing that. So here, we wanted to go to the ABC, and there are two ABCs, and the one we wanted was the first one, wasn't it? That's the reference node. And now we're going to set a node to be this one. Okay, so we see this C node is now stored in the C variable. So we have a reference to it. So this is the first ABC node. Now, relative path. So if we now go to our C node and we would like to find all the Fs that are children of our E child. So now we can go up and X, so we do look for EF. What is the context? Well, we are searching in the context of node. This is not the global, EF, this is the local. It's relative to the node that we had. So we find the ones under 111. So you can see that the way I assign the ID is that this is the root number, this is the first B, this is the first C. So you can see that they're all under 111. And there is only one E child. So that's the next one. And there's F number 1, 2, and 3 coming out. So that's how I compose this. So as you can see, this is different from if you take node away. And search through the whole 3 for EFs, you find that there are some other ones connected to the second B. But these are the one, not the ones we are looking for. So we are looking for the ones under the node D. So you see the difference? As if you, on your file system, if you have users, your name, you have college, you have your IMT 2571, then if you do CD assignment 1, for instance, then you go local here. If you do CD slash assignment 1, you will go up here. But now you're local to your current directory or to your current node. It's called the context node in XPath. Now, you've probably done CD dot dot to go to your parent. We can do this here as well. We can refer to the parent by looking at the path dot dot. And then we see, what is this? It's a B. It's the first B. We can see that from the one over there. It's the first B. So the first B is the parent of our context node, C, as we will be expecting here. Now, what if we were to look in the subtree? What are all the Fs under C, somewhere under C? We don't know exactly where. They should be under C somewhere. How can we search for that? And this is what I was mentioning in the beginning. We can do a descendant, but in this case, the descendant is not from the top of the document, it is from the current directory. So we do a dot, which is the path to our current context node. So if we do dot and slash slash F, then we see that we get all the Fs that are under A1, B1, C1. These are the Fs. And if we remove this, then it will be anything, because then the context node is the root and of the document, and under document there are more Fs than what we had in the context node. We can also, from a context node, we can also access an absolute path. So if we here do, what was it, A, B? Sorry, in our case we don't have the root, so we have to do this. sorry, that's Chrome. We have to do dash dash because the top is a document. And now in your program, you wouldn't have to do this. You would do dash directly because it's going to be, or slash directly because it's going to be the top of the document. But in our case, our XML documents is attached to the document of the browser, unfortunately. Was that too much, or we are still, we're going to have a break? Yes, after this. The same thing with descendant. So even though we are on the context node, so if we do F here, sorry, we get all the Fs. And if we prefix, we get just the one local to this node or context, or we get all the ones. So if you do slash slash or single slash, we remember that we go all the way to top, as you do in your file system. If you do cd slash user, it's very different from doing cd user on the local directory. Okay, let's take the break there, and then we'll go through some examples after the break. Then we're going to start look at node tests and attributes, because so far we are just looked at the tree structure, meaning children, grandchildren, and we're looking at the elements. We haven't really looked at texts or attributes or anything else. So let's, and we haven't started putting any constraints. We listed all the Fs as long as they are correctly positioned in the tree. But now we'll start to look at some specific ones. And so here is a way for us to pick out texts. We can find commands. We can find processing instructions. We can find nodes. So if we go to, for instance, here, if you go to the one that you're going to be working on in the assignment. So if we want to find all the text nodes, we find there are 96,000 text nodes in this document. And we could even look at some of them. If you want to see, are there any commands here? There are no commands in this file. What are the nodes? And nodes would be elements, commands, texts, processing instructions. So you see here we have the ones that are coming from the tree above us, the start of the tree, actually the root below us, I guess. So it's HTML, it's the body has a div, and we have the ski logs, and there's some texts. So this is how we have all the nodes. So it's possible to query for the type of node, not just star and the name of elements. We can, as we did before, look for any element, or we can look for any attribute. The at sign is to say that what comes after this is an attribute. So we could search for in our document, a document, we can search for all the ID attributes. So these are all the ID attributes returned as an XML node in the, we'll talk about this next week when we talk about the DOM. Everything is a DOM node, even the attributes, but the attributes are not part of the tree. That's why we didn't get them when we searched for nodes in the tree. So if you want to find all the ID attributes of F elements, how we do that? Then we need to find all the F elements first. And we separate each path or each part of the path by doing this. So this finds all the IDs of all the Fs in the document. This is easy to forget when we query. We are looking for the attribute, but we forget the at sign, and then it will look for a child element with the same name. So we just have to get used to including the at sign. So predicates. Now, if you go to Blackboard, and this is where I suggest if you have a computer and you would like to try some of the queries on the computer, you can go to Blackboard and you find a nutrition document. The nutrition document has two parts. Part number one is a list of what are the daily values. If you are an adult, this is how much you should have every day when it comes to fat, saturated fat, cholesterol, sodium, carbo, fiber, protein. This is how much you should have per day. And then there are some different types of food. There are 10 food items in this XML document. And for each of them, we say what type it is, what's the name, who's the manufacturer, how big is the serving, how many calories per serving, how much fat per serving, both total and saturated, how much cholesterol per serving, sodium, carbo, fiber, protein, vitamins, and minerals. And among the minerals, we just worry about calcium and iron, and the vitamins is A and C. So that is kind of the document that we're going to use. It's not very complex. So the XPath expressions we're going to go through here are not going to be very complex. That's why it's important that you do the exercise, because the exercise document is more complex. You get to see more of how to join everything. So what we're going to do here is the same thing you're going to do, is just combined into a more complex setting. So it's a good idea to work on the assignments and previous exams, where you find lots of XPath queries in which you get to combine these building blocks. But we're going to basically look more at the building blocks, and then you need to work on more in the assignment to get used to and to get to combine. So, what can we do? Well, we can test for certain node content. We can say, okay, we are looking for food. And what food are we looking for? So, what we're going to retrieve here is the food children of nutrition, and only those where the serving has a unit of cup. So, if you go here, we look at the nutrition. Now, remember that we can't do a slash. We have to do slash slash because we are in Chrome. So what do we want to do? We want to have nutrition food. And the requirement is that, let's see, what's the requirement? We're going back to the... we had the serving, and the unit of serving was a cup. So it has a child serving. Sorry. Shouldn't have this. These dots. It should have a child serving. Okay, they all have serving. And what should the serving have? It should have an attribute units. Okay, they all have. And what should the value of this attribute be? It should be cup. So there are no cup units. What about gram? Yes, we have some gram. What about milligram? No, no milligrams. It's all in grams. Let's see. Oh, there should be something that's not gram. Let's do, see what the rest is. Not serving equals grams. Let's see what this one has. What are the units? This one is the food. Let's say we need to find the let's see where we find the nodes. Children is for child nodes, so we need to find the serving. Let's see the serving. Oops. Unit is cup. So why didn't it show up with the cup? That was interesting. It does say unit cup. Yeah, units. That's it. That's it. It does say units, cup. Okay. This should have worked. Units equals cup. But this was not, so we'll take away the not and just go for the positive. Oh, there was a blank in before. So there was a blank cup. Sorry. So if I used the... you remember we had the contains function? Contains. So if we serving, if the serving contains, sorry, serving units contains cup, then we got it there. So it had cup, it just there was a blank there. Yeah, okay, it's picky, this. And we could do the same testing for numeric value. So in XPath, we can have string values, we can have numbers, or it could be integer or floating numbers, and we can have true or false. But these are functions. We're going to see that later on. These are true or false functions. So the basic types will be this, but we can also compare Booleans, but then we need true or false functions. Presence of a node. So if we test whether there are food elements that have vitamin A element. So what we do here, if we go nutrition food and say it should contain vitamin A. Let's see, food vitamin. Why is this not? Let's see. Vitamins. It's plural. Yep. Vitamins A. So we get all the 10. And why is that? Well, because this one is just testing that the vitamin A element is there. If you would like to test that the vitamin is larger than 0, we see that there are only 3. So this one is testing for the value. What are the value? The first one is just testing for whether it has a vitamin A element. See the difference? So now we test the value. And here, we test the presence of an A node. We don't care about the value, but we care about whether the node is there or not. So if you want to check that all our food items have vitamin A element, you can do this type of query. Or in general, if you would like to see that there is actually some content. So the reason why this works is that inside a test, we're testing for a Boolean value, an empty node set, because this one is a node set. So we can do we can search for vitamin A nodes. As you see, this is a node set, 10 nodes. In this case, the node set exists, so that's why it's true. If there had been no, this one would be false, and then it wouldn't show up. You follow me? So an empty list is converted to false. In this case, the list is not empty for the 10, and that's why it's true, that's why it's showing up. Now, this is where you can start to think of yourself. Look at this here. How would the XPath expression look like when we look for food high on sodium? And in this case, we say high on sodium is that it's at least 40 units per serving. Oh, sorry, 400. How would you write that? You can write it if you have your computer, you can try it. And if you have a paper, you can write a paper. You can discuss it with a neighbor if you're unsure about how it looks like. So, food high on sodium. You have an idea for how it's going to look like? Yeah. Yeah, I think so slash nutrition, because that's the root. And now, just because we are in Chrome, we do a slash slash, so we know that we're going to get it. Nutrition and food. And this is what I like to do when I write XPath queries. Start by finding the set of all candidate nodes. In this case, all food items first, irrespectively of what requirements we have. Just find them. And now we see that, okay, we have 10 food items. Then the next is, what is the predicate? And the predicate in this case is on the food. Okay? And you said that it should have a child sodium. So if you open here one of these, for instance, you see there is a child called sodium. So it should have a sodium child. Sorry, sodium child. Okay, they all have. And what should the value of that sodium child be? At least 400, so meaning that we have greater than 400, as you were saying. Okay, now we find that there are four of those. If you want to test if they are really the ones, we could find the first one, 0. And the 0 is bread. You know what, this one is... bread, and if you look at the bread, it has, where is sodium, 510. So that's why this one's showing up. Okay, let's go for the next one. We're going to define the name element of any food that has been produced by the manufacturer called Lakeson. So if you see here, the food has a manufacturer, and we want to find all the name elements inside food where the name element is Lakeson. Any suggestions how the query looks like? You are having problems or? No suggestions? Let's start then. What are we looking for? What notes? Yeah, we're looking for name, which happens to be under food, which happens to be under nutrition. Okay, these are our 10. So what is the requirement? The requirement is that the food, which is here, has a child manufacturer, and they all do, and the manufacturer's name should be Lakeson. You follow me? So that's the advantage of first getting up the path, is as I would say, okay, no, this is what they're looking for, and now we need to put up predicates. And we can put it where we want it in the path. Are there any other ways of doing this? what about saying that we want a predicate here? What would the predicate be then? Well, the parent should have a manufacturer. So this one gives us the same node. I think somehow this seems to be kind of the standard for students. I don't know why, because students, well, early years, this has been what I've been seeing. Okay, they find a node, and then they do the testing on the end node in the path. But there's no problem in, as we did before, in just putting this restriction, the predicate, where it belongs, namely on the food. The only food items you want to consider are the ones that have manufacturer Laxen, and we, by the way, look for the name of them. So we just put in the requirements or the restrictions or predicates where they make more sense. It's easier, I think it's easier to read this than having this dot, 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 dot at the end and then trying to put predicates on the other ones. So this is, I like this style, but the other one would work as well. And it seems that that's probably easier to understand, so more students tend to do that. But I think this is better, so if you could jump right here, I think that would be good. Okay, now what do we do if you want like to actually find a text node? This is the element node, and if you remember from yesterday, so we have food, and food has a child called name. Name has a child which is text element, and that text element is really the text content. So how do we query for that? It's the same query, but we're looking for something else. What do we look for? How can we get the text child of this element? Yeah? Yes, we just use the text function. Then you can see here we get a text node out of it. So this way we can return the text of it. Yes. So these are done all in the slides that you can look at later on. We have in XPath, there are some functions, not a lot. There are some functions that may be convenient to use when we are trying to make queries. It's kind of similar to in SQL. Do you remember in SQL, you have SQL queries? So the ones you have is concat, is to concatenate strings, because you can't use the plus operator, and it's not like in PHP where you use the dot operator either. In this case, you have to use concat. Luckily, you can feed many strings into concat. So if you have to concat many strings, you can all feed them all into one concat operation. You could check whether an element or attribute or a text contains something. So this would be a substring search. As I said yesterday, it's going to be as the like operation with an ampersand in front and back for a SQL query. Normalized space. I should definitely have used normalized space when I searched for cup, because you remember cup started with a blank. Because of that, it didn't show up. So if I use this function, normalize space before cup, I would probably get it. So let's try that. So if we go to the previous here, let's see. We had the. Oops, I didn't store it. Well, okay then. Yeah, we had cup, and we're not going to do the not. Sorry. It didn't. So if we do normalize space, serving units, it will come up. So now it removes blanks here and there and everywhere. It normalizes it. So okay, we should have used that before. Or I should have made my XML document better without blanks. We can check if a certain element or text or string starts with a certain text, in this case prof, whether the length of a string is a number, whether the substring starting at position 1, and remember, this is 1-based indexing, so the first character is not 0, it is 1 at position 1. So prof, what I'm searching for here, is the substring of 4 characters starting at the first character, and that's why I get prof. Substring after is looking for what in this string comes after 611. 611 is here, so it gives me the direct number for my phone. Or substring before, if this is hour and minutes, I can get the hours by just taking the substring before the column. Translate is basically replacing as one or more characters with some other characters. So if these were kind of Windows style, this could be Linux style. I will just replace it in one string before I do some comparison or so. So these are functions that, the ones in 1.0. Now there is an XPath 2.0 that has many more. Unfortunately, XPath 2.0 is not very widely supported. So that's why and it's easier to remember these ones. So this is where we were yesterday. Now, what are the name of chicken dishes where the name actually contains chicken? So that's the question, and that's so how would you do that? You could try to remember from yesterday, but we could also try to put it together. We'd like to find the names of chicken dishes, and these names should contain chicken. Anyone having suggestions? If we were to start where we usually start, saying what are we going to return? We're going to return the names. So let's at least start looking for our nutrition food name. What are the predicates?
Contains.
Yeah, where would you put the predicate? Sorry? After name? After food? Yes. After food, we can say, okay, there's a predicate. And what should the predicate be? Contains.
Name.
Sorry. Chicken. Okay. And if you remember what I did yesterday, is something similar. Except that I moved it, so rather than putting it here, as you said, it should have a name element, but since the name element is what I'm looking for, I said, okay, you could as well just say, okay, it should contain chicken in itself. So you refer to yourself and contain chicken. Either way would work. You could do it on the parent, or you could do it on itself, because you can refer to itself, even in the contains functions. So those are equivalent. Very good. So that's the one I had here. Now, there are some numeric functions as well. Plus, minus, multiplication. If you want to do division, you use this division, and mod would give you the mod operation. And we have round and floor functions for converting floating numbers to integer numbers. One thing to keep in mind, we're going to come back to count and sum. One thing to keep in mind is the number operation, because if we have elements that are texts, they may not automatically be converted to numbers. So if you compare two, for instance, or if you want to sort, to deal with them, then the number value may be different from the text value. So sometimes we do want to do to convert a text element into a number before we want to use it. That will give us some control on the value and the comparison of value if it's greater than or less than, because string may be greater than, but the numbers may be less than. Question.
I'm wondering if does it translate characters or letters or numbers then also?
Only if you do it this way. No, not under numbers. No, then it will fail. It will will try to convert the whole thing. Yeah, so it will fail. We say it's not correct XPath query. Yeah, but if you are comparing greater than or less than. Then, if you look at the string and length of strings, you may need to do a number conversion first. But the other thing to remember, and then we'll talk about it maybe today, maybe tomorrow, is that there will be some automatic conversion happening in XPath as well. So, if XPath has a number multiply with a string, then it will convert the string to a number by using this function internally before it does the multiply. So you can multiply numbers and strings, but they will have to be proper numbers than the strings as well. But there's a lot of implicit typecasting and type conversion going on. There are no questions.
How would I set the precision of the amount of decimals I want?
You don't. But you can use the string functions. So you could convert it back to a string, and you could try to say these. You could take the first n characters. So you could, because you also have a string conversion function. So you could take the int to a string, and then you go and pick the x number of string characters. But then you need to, and then you first may need to compute how many before the dot. And then, yeah. So in general, it's not for number conversion. It is for the more basic operations, just comparing and getting numbers. But you will have to convert to string and operate on strings in that case. We don't have true or false, but you can test towards true, towards false. And we do have a not function. So you don't have an exclamation mark equals to saying that it's not, well, you do have similar as well, but you can invert an expression by using not this way. So, if you want to see, are there any food elements that do not contain vitamin A element? And let's see if we can get this one up. So, we had, we kind of already did this. So we have food, and we say, vitamins, they were plural, A. So these are the ones that contain. And I did a quick one before as well when we were just testing this. Are there any food items without? And what would we do then? We would just do a not. And again, there is some implicit type conversion going on, because not is working on a Boolean value. This is a node list. Vitamins A would list the A elements, potentially multiple, but in this case it would be just one. And so how do we go from list to true or false? The type conversion is that if the list is empty, it's going to be false. If the list has elements, it's going to be true. So since these lists for all have true, then the not would give a false. So that's why we don't see anyone here. It means that all food items have vitamins A elements. You follow me? So we just invert or make the negation of the query. Oops, we had more here. Sorry. Now we can compare. Yeah, this is the other one. I think that I need to go to the slide anyway. Yeah. You can combine with and or. So you can make a predicate there where you combine various conditions with and or, as before. So, we would like to find food where total fat is no more than 15 and saturated fat is no more than 5. So how would that look like? Suggestions. So we see here, total fat is total fat, saturated fat is saturated fat, with dashes in between. Yeah? So the requirement is that it has a saturated fat gel, and it should be less than or equal to 15. And it should have it should be less than 5, shouldn't it? And total fat, see, there are several having, so only 7. Have less than 5, so 3 of them have more than 5 in saturated fat. You can see from the list here, they're out of the 10, we're already down to 7. They all have total fat element, but we don't know the value, and you were saying that this is should be less than or equal to 15 then. Yeah, so we see those who were low on saturated saturated fat were also low on total fat. So, makes sense. So we can combine with and or. Now, if we like to I kind of already did this as well, I think, look at the serving where the units are not in grams. Let's just go here and bring up the next page. Food where serving units are not in grams, or actually serving units that are not in grams. So what is the serving unit? So let's find foods. Food where the serving units are not in grams. So we can have, in that case, we may not have a not because it's different from, so we can look at it, but you can do a not equals to, but you can also do just different from by using exclamation mark or different from, not equals to, different from. You don't need to revert the test or the, because not works when you have a comparison already, but in this case we can see that it's not equal to a value. I was probably confusing you by saying we couldn't use a dot equal different from, but you can use on values, but not on sets. Okay, unit. What is the unit? It is on the serving. So serving has a unit. What's the unit? It's an attribute. How do we do with attributes? We use the at sign. So units, so they all have units, and should not be gram. Sorry, I can do that. I need to do this. So there are two food items where the units are not gram. Let's see what these two are. The first one is, coleslaw. Let's find coleslaw here. Let's see, vegetable coleslaw. So it has cup. And the other food element is Let's see if you find what the name is. The hazelnut spread. Let's see if I find the spread. The hazelnut spread. It is tablespoon. So that's why it didn't show up. Okay, let's, sorry, we had it here, yeah. Now, food except those having egg in the name. Then not is probably a good thing, because you don't have contain different from. So, anyone wanting to go for it? What is the constraint? We agree that there's something in the food, there is something not. And what is not? Contains name. Let's see. Oops, not that. That was wrong place. Name should not contain eggs. So 9 of the 10 do not contain eggs. So if we go for the the inverse, to see how many do contains eggs, there's the one. One contains eggs, 9 does not. Where there is no more than 2 calories per gram, so what do we have? Well, for some of them we have gram, here we have gram, and here we have calories. What would the predicate be? See, what we can do is that let's start with this one. Food, because there is something related to the serving. What is the first requirement? First of all, is that we need to know that their units are in grams, don't we? So we start by saying, okay, serving where units equals gram. Why didn't nutrition serving units? This is an attribute. Sorry. Attributes. Units equals gram. Yep. Okay. So we know the units in gram. So how can we? And then we need an and. And remember that. We have to write the and in lowercase. If you try and in uppercase, it's a different thing again. So it's lowercase. How can we find calories per gram? We do have calories. Calories. And we do have the let's say calories, and we need to know how big the let's say calories. Calories per gram. This is calories. And we have 29 grams, so div serving. Less than 2. Yeah, it's no more or less than equal. But still, it didn't come up anything. Should there be some? I think there should. No, sorry, not calories, because it's calories total. Sorry. It's the total attribute, because calories is just element. Calories total, sorry, I didn't see that. Because this is the total was the attribute value, so we need to find the total calories and divide that by the serving. Yeah, question?
I would argue it's better to times the serving by 2 and then compare it, since then you don't
need to... Yeah, you could. I mean, if this was something where you run it very on large sets, then of course you would prefer multiplication for division. Yeah, but in this small file, you will do it this way. So, but for efficiency reasons, you may want to, and especially if you had to do a lot of these calculations, you could do the opposite and multiply by 2 would hopefully be efficiently implemented in the system. Okay, we stop there. We are a bit over time already. And then we continue tomorrow with some of the other... is that a useful way of doing it? Going through? Thinking about it and seeing and reflecting a bit on the results? Okay, perfect. Thanks.
Så kan jeg bare ha assignment på der da, og så bare levere hele for selve faget, og så bare finner de noen selv denne, for det jo bare to makrofaler.
Hvis du, skal vi se hva den